I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Previously on Fuel.
She says quite openly that when she arrived, say, 5 or 6 years ago, she found LinkedIn a very cold place, and she didn't find it a very human place either. The key things in getting to the right questions is having space and time to think and having the courage to take risks. Be careful what you ask for. You might just get it. We use experiments and games instead of questions.
This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Get fuel.
You know, advertisers think that they know that they need to drive emotion in advertising to be effective, but they think they do that now through talking about the biggest problems in society. Maybe if we had little tin men that ridicule us for spoiling potatoes for 20 of their Earth minutes, we might be in better shape.
Hello, all you creative industry new business fans, and welcome back to Fuel. I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. Fuel is sponsored by new business development platform, The Advertist. Since 2014, The Advertist has been helping smart agencies find their next new client by making the job easier. The Advertist supplies all the talking points you need for client conversations so you can pass on those all-important industry nuggets that prove you know what you're talking about. News, insight, research, contact information, lists, tenders, people moves and freshly funded startups, they're all there in one place. So give the team a call on 0203 356 3717 if you're in the UK, or just email hello@theadvertist.com. The link's in the show notes at www.thefuelpodcast.com. So on with part three of my epic interview with Ian Murray. Ian shot to fame in the advertising world when he and Andrew Tenzer released a trilogy of reports about lack of diverse, unbiased thinking in the industry. So if you want a full rundown, just listen to parts one and two. It's all in there. In this part of the interview, Ian explains how a simple game exposes how humans have inbuilt prejudices, and he reveals a lot about not only weaknesses in the creative world's thinking, but also in regular humans too. And as you probably know, once you're aware of a problem, you can address it. Also, Ian exposes his lighter side with a quick rundown of his favourite leisure activities and a piece of nostalgic advertising material that encapsulates everything he's been talking about. Here's part three of Ian Murray, The Seeker.
Stand by in three.
Let's just go straight to this, because this I find fascinating, and I know, and I learned this from you. Okay, so, you know, I have to say, you know, thank you very much for bringing this to my attention. The dictator game. Okay, you mentioned it, you referenced it as sort of in The Empathy Delusion, and I then did I did some research on it, and we, you know, we spoke about it before. Let's just get this, because I think this is a fascinating experiment, and I think it's great because there is no one answer to the whole thing. But so explain first of all how the dictator game works so I don't fluff it.
Yeah, so the dictator game is a very, very simple idea, and this is the most elegant. Experiments are really simple. Basically, all you do with the dictator game is you have two people and you say to one of them, here's £10, for right. example, and I want you to decide, absolutely up to you, how you're going to share that £10 with this other person. Right, and it's just a random person. This doesn't have to be anybody you know or anything like that. Although, come on in a second, what happens when you do things like that as well? Because that's very interesting. So, and that's it. That's all they have to do. And so that's my point. There's not any convoluted question about the fairness of society or what you believe in terms of your values. And you just say, "Here's £10. Up to you. Whatever you think is appropriate to that other person."
So, what's the standard answer then at that point?
No,
if it's just plain vanilla, you give me £10, what am I most likely to do?
Right, so before I give you that answer, I'll tell you what standard economic theory, right, and what business is based on standard economic theory would predict would be the answer.
Yep.
Well, what it says is people are utility maximizers, so basically they will maximize, you know, the benefit to them, and in the absence of any other constraints or anything else, hang on, so I can just literally dictate this, can I? So I'll have the 10, thanks, you know. I mean, other guy gets nothing. I don't know this guy from Adam.
Yep.
He'll have nothing. That's what standard economic theory tells you. And this is the beauty of behavioural science, behavioural economics, because it's taken all of these assumptions and deconstructed them and shown that most of them aren't actually valid, frankly, that standard economic theory doesn't capture people's real world behavior. So what actually happens, the baseline level, when you do this, everybody goes for a 50-50 split, more right. or less.
Okay.
Right? So it's like complete stranger. Well, I'll take 5 and they can have 5. You know, uh-huh. that's it. Right? And this was the first basic insight of it, is that even that little thing alone, that little act alone, you know, basically rejected a very, very central kind of plank of, you know, standard economic theory, utility maximization. I'm being, this is very broad brushstrokes, obviously.
Sure, sure.
You see what, yeah. So that was the thing. So then we look at something like that and we go, well, hang on, what else can you do with that? That's interesting itself, but how does that talk to, for example, on a social and political level, all the stuff that was going on with Brexit a few years ago in the UK? Mm-hmm. Or what does it tell you about, as I said earlier, but if we can do this with big, big nationally representative samples, what will it tell you about how different types of people in society play the game? Yeah. And what the differences are. So that's what we do. We take it and we do these things with it and we find out. So, and you get some really interesting stuff going on then. And you're not asking anybody any questions. You're not going out and saying, tell me what you feel about Brexit. You know, do you still kind of get on with the people that voted the other way from you, da, 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 all that stuff? People give you answers. Some of them are honest. Others are social desirable answers. What we say is, did this? This was academic research I did with City University. Wrote a thing a few years ago called "When Things Go Wrong and People Are Afraid," and it was all about the aftermath of Brexit. And we got people to play dictator games. And we did the first one with the baseline. Guess what? Yeah, 50-50.
50-50, right?
Yeah, just playing with a stranger. Don't know who they are. That's fine. Yeah, 50-50. I'm a fair person.
So we are just generally programmed without any sort of biases to be able to, you know, like if you and I were in a room and somebody gave me a tenner, then I would share it. And they said, you've got to share it with somebody. And so yeah. I would give you 50. I'd give you 5.
Yeah. And the academic kind of theory behind this, the thing called inequity aversion, or another way, people like fairness, right? It's actually what people like.
Yep.
And guess what? They've replicated, I think we'll talk about this in a little bit anyway, they've replicated these dictator games with loads of other species as well. And they all do the same thing. So this is basically, the argument in this is that fairness is basically in nature, you know, to a certain extent. Again, broad brushstrokes, but you know, you can play it with capuchin monkeys, dogs,
no,
I think they've done
shit,
it with crows
really?
And things, and you know, they do the same thing. So this is your baseline. And then you go, well, hang on, there's a lot of crap going on about Brexit, and we know that there's polarization and everything. How do we get people to act? How do we get to know what's really going on rather than people tell us what we want to hear? Well, we'll play the dictator game. But what we do this time is we say, okay, have another go this time, and we very subtly prime certain identity characteristics And so you're now playing with someone who voted the other way from you in the referendum.
Right.
Do you depart from the baseline fairness thing then? If you're playing with an out-group, for example, if you voted to remain and you're voting, you're playing with a Brexiter, do you depart? It won't surprise you here. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Right? You keep a bit more of it for yourself, yeah? The other thing happens as well is if you're playing with someone that's in your in-group, you exhibit what's called in-group love. You might give them more than the 50%, you know, because you're like, yeah, good for you, you know, etc. All of this makes intuitive sense, doesn't it? You know, that this is how things work. But people won't necessarily tell you this if you ask them questions about it.
No, exactly.
So they play these little games, they enjoy playing the games, and we get much richer data out of it than you would get from asking questions. And there's some really interesting things come out. You can play this with lots of different identity characteristics, and you get what we would argue is a much more real-world picture of what's going on. And you can do it with a whole lot of questions that would be related to marketing and advertising as well, you know, because let's go back to a conversation about brand purpose or social purpose, you know, and also a lot of the stuff that gets talked about generational marketing as well. So, you know, younger generations being much more purposeful, and driven by fairness and et cetera, and their economic and consumption behaviour, right? That's we're all familiar with that as a kind of a line that's taken. We debate if, frankly, that kind of, you know, slightly shallow kind of characterisation of a whole kind of generation is right. But how do we get to that? Well, people have asked all sorts of questions about it, you know, attitude statements saying 70% say this and all the rest of it, all biased in terms of people wanting to project themselves in a good light. Ask them to play a dictator game and you get some very different answers. And one of the answers you get that I think is the first time you're hearing this one here first, Keith, because I haven't published this one, is young people are the age group. So young I'm talking about, so they, you know, so let's say 18 to 24s.
Right.
Yeah? When they play the dictator game, they're the most likely to depart from the equal share in scenarios. Yeah. So they'll move away from, you can get them to move away from fairness in various situations more than any other group. So for example, if they were playing with someone they regard as being in their out group, whether it was politically or any other way, they are more likely to punish that person in the dictator game than any other age group is. So they've got a much more malleable attitude to fairness, right? And so then you start to think, well, hang on, if fairness is, progressiveness is about fairness, is this kind of really kind of blanket story we tell about Gen Z being the ones who'll save the world, is that actually kind of really capturing what's going on? It's too broad brushstrokes. It's much more nuanced than that. Young people are more influenced by the behaviour of others. They're much more influenced by wanting to belong.
Yep.
And so when you prime a whole lot of identities, you get a much bigger departure from this basic kind of, you know, fairness 50-50 split idea than you do with other groups. And that might not, I would argue, be something that would be what a lot of people in our industry would expect to happen. I think they'd expect it'd be older people that'd be out there kind of polarising with, people that don't agree with them or have a different identity, but it's younger people. And it's a lot of it's about just basically the psychology and emotion that's involved in being a young person, you know? So in a way, the people that are advocating for young people in this world are actually doing them a disservice because their behaviour is much more nuanced and complex than they're being given credit for. So in a way, what I'm telling you might be sounding like a criticism, right? And it might be challenging a kind of very positive narrative there is about young people. But my argument is the best thing you can do is actually try and capture their lives as accurately as possible. And that's the most respect you can give anyone in society, is to try and find a way actually capturing their behaviour properly. And that's how we use these games, is to try and get past all the kind of, the kind of surface layer of kind of, desirable and biased answers you get when you try and ask people about, their deepest values and, motivations.
That is fascinating. Absolutely. I mean, I love the whole concept of it. And I mean, I already know the answer to this, but there are resources on YouTube where you can actually look this up, and aren't there?
Yeah.
The Dictator
yeah.
Game and stuff.
Yeah.
Like
if simply Google the Dictator Game, and you'll find a whole wealth of things that come up. It's been used in loads of different domains. One of our reference points was a lot of stuff to do with polarization in the US, political polarization. There's a whole lot of research. They call it effective polarization there, this idea that what's actually happening is it's not about, it's not about issues. It's actually just based on social cognition that person is different from me.
Right.
And I want to belong to this group. And actually, what tends to happen in industries like ours, we tend to kind of frankly rationalize it a lot more than a lot of people out there do. We think it's about an issue, and actually it's about simply belonging to a group. And these games get at that in a way that you wouldn't if you asked them a whole lot of detailed right. questions about a specific issue. But yeah, if you just Google it, Dictator Game, the Ultimatum Game, I think you're familiar yep. with as well. It's another version of it, and a whole lot of things like that. And so, yeah, so a lot of the time what we're doing is we're asking people to play these little games that get things they'd never tell you if you ask them a straight question.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Ian, I mean, I could talk to you for hours. In fact, I pretty much have been talking to you for hours on this is the whole thing, but it's absolutely fascinating. And so if anybody wanted to follow up on this and to get in contact with you, I mean, what is the best way for people to reach you these days?
Yeah, I mean, well, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm there, and
obviously,
and then, if I didn't say that, it's like, my email's the other one, so it's ian@house51.co.uk.
Perfect.
Very simple.
Perfect. What you got coming up? I mean, apart from LinkedIn, I mean, have you got any sort of other projects in the pipeline?
Yeah, we've got a few things. I'm actually interestingly going back to doing what I used to do a lot more of. I've actually been working on some pretty classic kind of advertising development work for one of the biggest brands in the world that'll be out in the summer, but I don't think Hello. I can say too much about it, really.
Oh, fantastic.
But what's interesting there is that's back to literally what I think where I really started.
To your home ground,
creative development research and, how do we make an ad that people will really like?
Good for you. Well done. I guess that Coinbase ad at the and then the Super Bowl threw everybody, didn't it? Threw everyone for a loop, and they're maybe that's creative now.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're in the same orbit as some other people that have obviously quite a lot to say about how advertising works, like Orlando Wood, yep. Obviously Lemon and things like that. And we cross over quite a lot in terms of, we take a more cultural perspective, but then loads of the work that he's done on, exactly, what bits of advertising used to work best and how have we...
It's all changed,
We've kind of lost them a little bit, and I think he's done a great job of arguing in a very detailed and evidence-based way for how we need to get back to some of the stuff that we used to do. So it's good to be actually putting some of that back into practice, because I've been doing a lot more of this kind of, if you like, more strategic and, bigger question stuff, but actually getting back to working with an agency and saying... try to help them think about what they should make. It's quite good fun as well.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, okay. Now we're on to the fun part of the game. Fun part of the interview. And I wanted to ask you. These are equally fascinating. I knew you wouldn't let me down on these. First of all, when you're not researching, how do you switch off? What do you do to relax?
When you've got your own little business, that's actually quite a hard thing to do, and it's taken me a long time to learn how to do it. Yep. I'd say it's taken me most of the life of House 51 to figure out. But last year, partly driven by pandemics and stuff, we bought a Volkswagen camper van. And so we go off in our Volkswagen camper van. And
whose name is...
Sorry?
You've got a...
It doesn't have a name yet. I feel very bad
you
about that.
Named
it doesn't
it.
Have a name yet. Yeah, it's not been named, but it's we'll need to get around to that. But it doesn't have a name. It's a new one. I've got to say, I'm not a purist. It's not one of the 60s ones. It's got technology in it, and it, you know...
It actually has a working heater.
and power steering and, you know, gears and things, you know? So we're not... Don't imagine it's like the Mystery Machine on Scooby-Doo or anything like that, you know?
One of the most enjoyable holidays I've ever had was when my wife came over from the States. I was living in London. When she moved over, I took her on. We hired a new V-Dub camper, and we went round the Southwest Peninsula, and we timed it. It was just at the same time as a cross moor cycling championship was going on at the same time across Dartmoor, and we were so funny because we were caught up in the middle of it, and in the hills as we were going up the hills, they were all cycling past us coming as we were going up because we weren't fast enough, and then as we were coming down the other side, we were shooting past them, and they were like, bloody motorists.
It's, you asked about relaxation. One of the things it's taught me, I didn't think I was a kind of fast or aggressive driver, but the camper van has...
It slows you down, doesn't it?
I've got used to everything being a bit slower now, and there's no hurry to get there and everything, and, you know...
It's the journey, the destination.
Sorry?
It's the journey, not the destination.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, basically, next week we're off to... I've lived away from Scotland for a long time. I've only moved back a couple of years ago, so part of it is... I used to be embarrassed when I lived in London that people would tell me about all the fantastic places they'd been in Scotland, and I hadn't been to them, you know. So I'm going to go off and actually discover my own country over the next couple of years. So, and next week we're starting with the Isle of Skye. So that's one of the big things we're doing.
Beautiful.
And other cliched Scottish things like golf. I play golf. And
Scots did invent the game, after all.
Yeah, well, it's the nearest I have to a religion, I think. So,
good for you. Excellent. What's your handicap? Do you have?
Only got my handicap last year, so it's 16. So it's respectable. But my dad and my brother were county champions, so I'm kind of, I'm the duffer.
Blimey. I gave up on it. I didn't have the patience for it.
It's a very
interesting game, sport.
The question you asked me was, what did I do for relaxation? I'm not sure it qualifies as relaxation at the moment.
That is the furthest thing from relaxing, playing golf.
Yeah.
Walking about, getting frustrated, trying to find a ball. That's not funny.
Yes.
But, excellent. Right, now, show and tell. Did you bring something along that has significance?
Uh-huh.
He's actually bought something as well. Look at this.
You see what that is?
Yes, it's a Mash Get Smash guy. It's one of the aliens.
It's a Smash Martian, and it's a birthday card that my mum bought me years ago, and it used to do the Smash Martians.
And then they smashed them all to bits. They did that last, didn't they?
The batteries went on it a long time ago. Why is it significant? Well, when I was a kid, and of course this dates me age-wise, this was my favourite ad. I used to come home from school at lunchtime, and it would be on. And you know, it's all the cliches are true. It was better than the cartoons that were on or the programmes that were on, and it was for powdered instant mashed potato.
For Mash Get Smash.
Yeah, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And so then I went into the industry I'm in now and spent a lot of time, as I say earlier on, in time basically doing one of the things that creative people hate, which is advertising effectiveness research, you know, and testing ads and all the rest of it. And my mum, who I always assumed didn't have any idea, you know, what I did for a living, this is a card she got me for my birthday one year. And I thought it was just because... I was She was remembering, you know, my favourite ad when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turned out she'd been listening to all the crap I talked about advertising, and she'd picked out the card because she also knew that even 20-odd, 30 years later, however long it was, I still thought that was emblematic of the high watermark in advertising.
Oh,
and she got me because she knew it tied in, and I would still talk about it in my day job as well. And
what
I still
mum.
Do talk about it in my day job. You
what
know?
A mum that is.
So there you go. So that's it. She pays attention.
Thanks.
And then it's back a little bit to, well, I mentioned Orlando Wood earlier.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of the stuff he talks about is like the Smash Martians would be a really good example of, you know,
it's got all, the right moves on it, hasn't it?
You know, advertisers think that they know that they need to drive emotion in advertising to be effective, but they think they do that now through talking about the biggest problems in society. Maybe if we had little tin men that ridicule us for boiling potatoes for 20 of their earth minutes, we might be in better shape.
But it's got everything. It's got jingles, humour.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's.
And also the fact that, I mean, they don't advertise it using this anymore. And in fact, the brand itself has changed hands. But imagine making an ad that 40 years later is licensed to sell other products as well.
And merch. I mean, haven't they got, is there merch available? I wonder if
there is. Yeah. On the back of this, it says this is official licensed product of the Smash Martians.
Oh, somebody's got that license. Oh, we'll have to check that out.
But there's the thing. Talk about cultural impact.
Yeah.
Right. And this is my point. You know, I'm going to go back where I started, moaning a little bit about brand purpose. We get told that the reason we're doing all of this as well is because it's effective and it drives emotion. There will be no purpose campaign that's been made that will drive licensing of other products 4 decades down the line and have that kind of impact. So
incredible.
There you go, sir.
There you go. You've got it all back round in a circle.
Got it all back round there.
Yay.
See how I did that?
Congratulations, man. Excellent stuff. Okay, and we're going to round it off with a song and a book. So let's have the book first, because we're going to play out on the song. So, so the book you recommend?
The book is a book by a guy called Franz De Waal, and it's called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? Right?
Okay.
So, fun enough, I've tied this in as well, and it's not an accident because I'm lucky. Because I've got one little business, I can kind of pursue things that interest me generally.
Yep.
Franz De Waal, a little recommendation here as well. When we were talking about ultimatum games and dictator games, Franz De Waal did the most entertaining illustration of this fairness principle you'll ever see. He did it with capuchin monkeys. So if you Google Franz De Waal capuchin monkeys, you'll see the most hilarious and effective illustration of this fairness principle that you'll ever see. And that's what he does. He's an ethnologist. He spends his time studying animals. But the great thing about the book is it's not just a book. It's got loads of lovely anecdotes in it about how clever squirrels are or crows are or any other kind of animals. So it's brilliant read on that level. But in the deeper level, what's great about it is it shows that by studying the animals, it makes us, again, confront the myths we tell us about ourselves and how we are unique or different. And so, for example, back to that idea of the political polarization we touched on earlier, studying chimpanzees and how chimpanzees interact in the wild and how they, you know, they have a social hierarchy. Well, the interesting thing is that this brings us back to, well, how did Brexit or Trump happen, right? Well, we probably don't realise enough about, we think that's all about the values and the issues that drive us, but actually it's a bit the same probably as the chimpanzee, that when there's a lot of food put down, the chimp looks to see what food the kind of, you know, the dominant male has seen and only takes the stuff the dominant male hasn't seen. And the idea is that we are not that far off of that. You know, we want to belong and, you know, be in with a silverback as well and everything. And maybe if you'd spend 10 years priming the US audience that Trump is this incredibly successful businessman on The Apprentice, it maybe isn't that surprising that a lot of disenfranchised people decide they want to be with a guy you've told them is a winner for the last 20 years, you know? So that's where I go with that.
I see that. I can see how we got there.
Really fun stuff about animals that tells us more about ourselves than we would know if we just thought about
ourselves. That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Honestly, I'm going to get that book.
The Capuchin Monkeys, Google that on YouTube. I won't spoil it.
That's all right. I'll put a link to it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
We love it so much that we use it as an icebreaker in our creds presentations at House 51 a lot, you know, just to say, this is what we are on about. This is what we hope we do. We talk about behavioral science, and hopefully we do it in a kind of entertaining way as well. But it's nothing like, I mean, he's the master. It was brilliant.
Fantastic. So, there you go. Excellent stuff. All right. Well, we will put that in the show notes, and we'll link to it so that people can look it up for themselves. And we're going to end up on a musical note here, because I couldn't let you go without recommending a song. And I think this is a first, because it's you supplied me with just the most amazing justification as to why you like this song. So just talk me through this. How did you? So the song is what?
The song is called This Is What She's Like by Dexys Midnight Runners.
Right.
And I don't know, Keith, how familiar all of your audience will be with Dexys Midnight Runners. The men of a certain
vintage. We all know Come On Eileen. We all know that.
And that's almost where I'm going with this. Come On Eileen is an absolute staple in any wedding reception, certainly in the UK for the last 40 years. And it's basically... is their most successful song, and it's the classic story of that became a millstone around their neck. You know, it's all they were known for, this kind of, almost like some people that never heard anything else about it would think they'd produced this novelty one-hit wonder record that you hear at weddings. So
it's almost like somebody in research that just had three pieces that he kept getting remembered for.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Do you see where I'm going with this? I tie everything back, you see, you know? Nothing is left a chance. But, look, so I've always loved this band. I was the right age for them. You know, I was a teenager when they were popular and, you know, all the rest of it. But the thing is, this album that it comes from is an album called Don't Stand Me Down.
Yeah.
And this is one of these ones that went into folklore as one of these kind of lost masterpieces. He's a man that's incredibly, Kevin Rowland, the lead singer, a man that's very committed to his art. And he, when he was making a follow-up to the album that had Come On Eileen on it, he created this thing called Don't Stand Me Down. And the song that I've recommended is a 12-minute song. And basically, if the record company refused to release that as the single, he wasn't releasing a single. And the album tanked, and then he frankly wasn't really heard of for about 28 years after that, and he came back recently. So I love him for the totally commitment to what he does, and the kind of basically not compromising. And I think one of the things we were kind of sharing things, you know, up on email before we had this conversation, and one of those articles makes a great point about him. Come on Eileen itself is so well known that he could have had a very lucrative career just going around and touring the album.
Just thrashing the hell out of that.
Almost tribute to himself and have a very lucrative career doing that. But he doesn't. Apparently lives in quite a modest flat in East London, and he wants the work to be, you know, enjoyed in the way it was intended. And if that's to a smaller group of people, that's it. So that's it. But this is what she's like. And the other great thing about it is narratively, it's a conversation between two friends, and one's asking the other, what's she like? And the great thing about it is, over 12 minutes, you realise he never actually gets round explicitly.
Never gives an answer.
To telling you what she's like. But I think he makes you feel it, and that's the thing as well, you know. So it's not a kind of, it's not about, there's lots of great lyrics in it and stuff, but the thing is, at one point he just says, I don't know what bit you're going to play, but there's a bit when he says, I want to express myself, and he just goes off on this kind of a cappella thing for real. So that's him.
Fantastic.
Kevin Rowland.
What a hero.
One of them. I mean, and one of the greatest comebacks ever. After 28 years, he came back, and I went to see him in the second concert they ever did after he came back, persuaded my wife to go with me, and we're both sitting there, and she's like, I don't really know why I'm here to listen to this guy that does Come On Eileen. And I'm like, this could be bad. He hasn't done anything for 28 years. It could be bad. And it was the almost definition of one of the kind of comeback triumphs as well. So it's
a beautiful soul singer. I mean, really, yeah. I mean, technically as a soul singer, I mean, it's just just fantastic. So excellent. Well, that's your walk-off music there, Ian. Fantastic.
Cool.
And I just got to say, this has just been an absolute blast. And thank you so much for putting the time aside. And we will definitely be splitting this into two parts. I can't see much of a point in losing some of this valuable stuff. So this will be a two-parter. But thank you so much for all your time, and good luck in everything that that House 51's doing, especially as far as LinkedIn's concerned, and with your new project. And I can't wait to hear more about that, and I'm sure you'll tell us when that's coming up. And be visible, plenty visible on LinkedIn, and we'll stay in touch that way. But it's been great fun, and good luck on your holiday and taking your V-dub bus around. You've got to give it a name.
I do have to give it a name. I'll make that a priority.
I reckon. And let us know. But anyway, thank you so much again, Ian.
Yeah.
Been great talking to you, and look forward to talking to you again soon. All the best.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to be very intrigued to hear which part of the 12 minutes you play me out with, you know.
Fantastic. All right, my friend. Thank you so
much.
Friend.
See you later. Thanks, Ian. Bye.
Awesome. A podcast for the ages. I can just see the reviews now. Thank you, Ian Murray, a top gentleman and one of those guys you need to bring along to every pitch. I hope I get another chance to chat with you soon, Ian. All the best to you, my friend. Until then, my thanks to Team Fuel. That's Matt, Donna, Peter and you, the ones who keep coming back for more episodes. Thank you all so very much for helping us grow. Fuel is a proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, which does exactly what it says on the tin. It's a network of quality marketing shows, a shopping mall of brilliant business, PR, digital, content marketing, sales and entrepreneur podcasts. And if you like this show, then check out all the others at marketingpodcasts.net. That's podcast with an S at the end. Or look in the show notes at www.thefuelpodcast.com. Ta-da for now. We'll be back next week on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm a Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.